coming to you live from the wrong side of the tracks. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and wait, no, is this the right side? That's, no, I'm wrong. They look exactly alike. They're the same. This is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 999, Gelatin, the Doom of Man.
All right. I think they're gone.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, everybody. Glad to have you here. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And they're definitely not watching anymore. We're fine. It's okay. Don't worry about it at all.
Everything's fine.
Everything's
here.
Good. We're all fine here now.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking, buddy. So don't worry about any of that. That's all good. No, it's just fine. Glad to have you here. Welcome to the show. It's a good show we got prepared for you today.
Actually, yeah. This is the first time in recent memory that I've been, like, kind of maybe almost even excited for all of the segments.
Wow, that's a ringing endorsement of our work.
Of our own show.
Yep. I'm sure many, many readers are still paying close attention after that.
Yep. It's going to be a good one. That's what I'm saying.
They already
know the disasters that happened. They're online already.
That's fair. But welcome. Glad to have you here. Today's first segment that we're talking about is escape rooms. The other night, my associate and I, along with a half dozen or more people that we know, we went and did one of those escape room events at a local place near us, and it was a lot of fun. We had a good time with it. We're going to talk about it on the show here, and that's what we're going to do. Do you want to tell the people what an escape room is?
Sure. An escape room is a room.
Oh my God, I'm going to shoot you in the mouth.
I actually wasn't going to go there, but that's more your territory. An escape room is, generally, it is a room, mm-hmm. and you are locked in the room with a number of your compatriots. I suppose you could probably do one on your own if you're really quite good at solving puzzles quickly, but it seems lonely. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of clues and weird crap on the walls, and you have to figure out how to get out of the room. Ideally, you are locked in the room and actually can't get out until you solve the puzzle or puzzles to find the key or learn the combination or uncover the secret hidden tunnel. In Washtenaw County, where we live, apparently it is against the law to lock a person in a room, at least in a business. And so they had to provide one door that we came in through, which was locked, and it was the one we had to get open, and an emergency exit door that was open. But if you left through it, you were not allowed back in.
Which is probably a good idea in general. But it takes away
a little bit from the suspense.
Sure.
I mean, I guess, you know, at any rate, they're probably going to let you out, but just the fact that there were two doors right next to one another, one with an illuminated exit sign, was like, well, I guess.
Yeah.
So we'll do the puzzles.
There's a whole bunch of, you know, hidden keys and locks with combinations on them, and puzzles where you've got to figure out letters or numbers from, you know, word scrambles or whatever the case may be, or look at things upside down or in mirrors, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just crazy sorts of things like that. Like, if you think back to old 90s text adventure games or point-and-click adventure games,
yeah.
if you're a computer game playist, it's that kind of puzzly stuff.
Yeah.
Find the code to open the box, to get the key to open the other box, to get the key to open the other box, to get the code to open the first box again, and go around in a circle until you die.
So real quick, because I feel like we should have addressed this before we began recording, but it just occurred to me. I would like to be able to go into some details of some of the stuff they did with puzzles, but I don't want to give it away, so here's the question. Do we not say the name of the escape room that we went to, which I believe has only narrowed it down to two in Washtenaw County, though I could be wrong on that.
Sure.
Or do we stay
I think we say the name
hazy
of the,
on the details?
I think we say the name of the room, because we should give them some credit.
Okay.
It's fair. And then we do the thing we do in Wrong About Books, and we're like,
oh, okay.
After this point, we're going to talk spoilers.
All right.
And then if you want to go do this particular break or escape room, don't listen to this part. Jump back in a little bit later on.
Yeah. Okay.
But listen to the next part. We'll tell you when to stop listening.
Unfortunately, once you've stopped listening, we have no good way to tell you when to start listening again. But generally, these segments are about a half hour long.
Good God. So, you know, this is the worst podcast
I'm just saying,
on the internet.
Like, what are they going to look for? Listen for the chime. Oh, wait, you're not listening. So anyway, like, we'll stay hazy on the details until we mm-hmm. get to that point then. So the one that we went to was called Breakout, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
And we'll post a link to their, I believe, their site on the show notes, and you can find their Facebook page and see the horrible, awkward picture of all of us that they made us let them take and put on the internet for everyone to see forever.
Oh, they've got locations in Florida, too.
Huh. I didn't get the feeling that this particular one was bigger than that single location.
No, they've got also got ones in Warren and Lansing, Michigan.
Hmm.
So, anyway. So, yeah, that's the organization that put it on. I mean, it's a room.
You want to, given that, taking into account that neither of us has ever done another one of these, mm-hmm. do you still want to do our thumbs up, thumbs down, broad
review? Like, if it's, I guess, our thumbs up, thumbs down, broad review is, if the basic description we've given you makes you go, oh, it sounds like a good time, you should, whether or not you should do it based on that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if what we said so far makes you think, yeah, I would, that sounds like a fun use of my afternoon, do we recommend proceeding on that instinct?
Sure.
Yeah, I thumbs up it.
I give it a thumbs up.
It was worthwhile. Yeah, it was a good time. It's, depending on the size of your group, I'm not sure how they price it, actually, because one of our other group members organized the whole thing, and I think he had a coupon, too.
Yeah.
So, it wound up running about $20 for each of us.
Yep.
For about an hour of play. I think it was.
Yeah, I get the feeling it's, if you're with your own group, you basically book the room for an hour and there's a price for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know if this one does. I know other ones will let you just show up and wait for enough people to be there and they'll just put you in with strangers, you know, to make sure your group is large enough to do it. But mm-hmm. That's not how we did it. So, yeah, but I would guess given the coupon and the number of us, it could be considerably pricier than it was.
Mm-hmm.
But for $20 each, I think it was definitely worth the time and the money.
Yeah, it was a good time. And you know, there you're dealing with one of the fun kind of contrasts of it. I don't know about fun is the word I want there, but is, I mean, you're dealing with just a room in like an office complex that they've built over there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things where you're like, this is clearly not an evil circus.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't actually have that much trouble suspending my disbelief.
Once I got inside the room, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. And two, I actually appreciated that there were some things that I could clearly disregard.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, they said beforehand that I didn't have to go up and dig around under the ceiling, you know,
the
push up the
tiles.
Ceiling tiles yeah. and dig around in there. That's good because that cuts down the search space quite a bit. But
yeah.
We don't want to get into that until we get into the spoiler section,
sure.
Probably.
I would say still broadly speaking, again, keeping in mind that this is my first personal experience with this,
mm-hmm.
I was able to be relatively immersed, like you said, once we were in the room, but it was not really well produced. They had a video that they played beforehand that was supposed to set up the story of why you're in here and why uh-huh. it matters. And it was so, like, it wasn't just poorly made, like, oh, you know, they couldn't afford to hire actors. It was like the people doing it weren't even trying. It
sure.
was just, it was bad and lame.
It was hokey, yeah.
I'm gonna
dispute that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Like, I enjoyed the hokiness of it because there's no way you can make a safety video for an escape room that includes the phrase, here is the exit, you can walk out of at any time,
uh-huh.
that isn't hokey and doesn't automatically destroy the suspension of disbelief.
Well, right, but they could have done a airline-style safety video that was 30 seconds long, or a minute long,
I guess,
and
yeah.
then, after that, have a introduction to the story to get you immersed, you know, video.
Sure.
That could even have run inside. Put you all inside the room, the door slams, the lights shut off, and a mm-hmm. recording plays, and you're like, oh, now I see what's going on, and then the timer starts. Even if it were that garbage video,
uh-huh.
that would have been more immersive than we're all sitting in the conference room and watch this video on the TV,
okay,
and then we all walk back in and make sure you remember to get your purses off the purse hooks when you're done, and go. So I don't think they did a terrible job,
mm-hmm.
What I was going to say after that was, despite how hokey the video was and how a lot of the bits and pieces weren't super impressive to look at. It, like you said, it was fairly immersive, and I enjoyed it. And the puzzles were pretty good. They stood up. So it didn't stand on the "you are terrified that the evil ringmaster is going to come and keep you forever." It stood on the strength of its puzzles and mechanics.
Yes, I agree that the puzzles held my attention more than the story.
Yeah.
Oh, the story was fun because, you know, you got to make, like, "we're at an evil carnival" jokes the whole time. That was kind of cool.
Did anyone do that?
I did.
Oh, I missed that entirely.
I made one to you.
What did you say?
I said, if we're, you know, if we're trapped in this evil carnival, you know, forever, I'll eat you first. Or whatever. I don't remember what I said.
We weren't even in the room yet at that point.
Oh.
Well, should we move on to more spoilery
stuff? Yeah, let's go on to spoilery stuff about this particular escape room and what's going on with it. So if you don't want spoilers for the Ringmaster's Den escape room that Breakout Escape Rooms puts on, don't listen to the next bit. Come back when we get to the commercial, which will be in about probably 10 minutes or so.
10 to 20.
Yep. You are now in the spoiler zone.
The spoiler zone.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday at the Silver Dome.
So there were a lot of puzzles, a lot of puzzles.
There were more puzzles than I expected. Like, one of the things that I wondered about is because we had, how many people did we have? Nine?
We had nine
people in our group. And I'm like, this seems like too many. I feel like we're either going to blitz through the puzzles really fast because there's going to be, like, too much manpower to do them, or we're going to not make it, not because we can't solve the puzzles, but we keep tripping over each other.
Yeah.
And it wound up being like, no, you need some...
You need fresh eyes on a thing.
You need fresh eyes on a thing, and you just need raw, you know, a number of people to get through them in the amount of time allotted.
Yeah. It helped, too, that all of us seemed to be pretty good about, like, if we weren't getting a puzzle, moving on.
Yeah.
And if you were working on a puzzle and hadn't gotten anywhere and someone else walked up, not standing there and getting in their way. Like,
sure.
Just move on to another thing. Maybe come back if you have an epiphany.
Yeah.
Everyone seemed to be relatively mobile. I had a few times at the beginning where I felt like I was just standing around because I didn't want to keep anyone from doing the puzzle they were engaged in. But once we got going, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I was about the same way. I felt a lot. There were a number of points where I'm like, everybody's engaged in a puzzle. I don't know where the current puzzle nobody's working is.
Yeah.
But with nine people, that's not too unexpected. And it never felt long. Like, it felt more like I was getting a break than like I was being useless.
Yeah. So what they did was they had a, there's sort of a big central puzzle that we had to figure out to open the last safe. And we didn't even know that, but it became pretty clear pretty quickly. There were all these folders with like puzzle pieces basically in them. We had to figure out which one was the right one for each section. And then a bunch of little, like, locked boxes and paintings and pictures and little gadgets and things around. There was a lot of, like, solve this puzzle to get the combination to the box that has the next clue or the next key or the next thing we need. And I feel like we got probably four or five keys in the first couple minutes and then opened some stuff. And then it was like, okay, now it's puzzle time.
Yeah.
And then they also had... So there's cameras throughout the room and microphones. So there's at least one games master kind of watching and listening in part to make sure that you're not like they didn't make us put our phones or keys or anything in a lockbox. We had everything with us. They basically said, just don't use your phone to like look up if someone has done what we're doing here online and told you how to solve it. And so we were allowed to use our phones for flashlights and they said, please don't pick any locks, you know, and don't try to pry anything open. Open it properly. But so they were watching for that, but they were also watching to see either if we got some things right, she just had to wait to hear one of us say, oh, well, I know that the answer to that word scramble is this. And then they had this little fortune teller guy in the corner who would like cackle and his eyes would light up and he'd spit out a card that would be like, you've solved this puzzle. Here's the clue for the next one. But also if we seemed like we were really hung up on something, occasionally it would just spit out a hint.
It's oh, like, was oh. that how that worked?
Yeah. So
that I didn't catch.
I'm pretty sure that was just like, because we beat our heads against that one with the black light and the whiteboard for a while. And then a hint just appeared. And I think it was because it was the last one we had to do and we'd been working on it for a while. And the same one, the other one where it was like, he likes to use abbreviations. Here are some letters and what they mean. I don't think that one was tied to an event or anything.
Gotcha.
So that was mostly that woman actually running something from somewhere listening to us,
mm-hmm.
which was actually kind of cool.
So I think that's a good system because it, a lot of time, like it's a thing we bump up against a lot in game design where you're trying to design a system of things that will, without any intelligent self-awareness, produce the result you want.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's easier just to have a person go, okay, there's the thing. I need to just do the thing.
Yeah.
Like it's, sometimes it's easier to just have somebody intervene. It's like a lot of times, a lot of designs will get to a point where like, this would work if it had a games master.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know.
We come up to that a lot.
Yeah. I think it's good on them for just being like, just have a games master.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And I think in that situation, that's the best way to have done it anyway. Because even if they had had all kinds of money and to spend on developing a program to run an AI to automate the whole thing, it would never be as good, I don't think, as a...
Right. Or trying to design the puzzles in such a way that you get the clue you want when you need it. And,
yeah. Well, it also added a sort of interesting... And this is my problem personally, because I run into this with other things. But if there's a person and there's a problem with something, you're like, oh, I don't think... there's a clue and you don't have the right answer, but you're like, yeah, but do I not have the right answer, or are they morons and I know the right answer and they don't?
Uh-huh.
And I need to work around that. And I think they got everything right, but like there was a thing we had to hang on the wall and we couldn't find the hooks, but there were clearly two holes in the drywall where hooks had been that matched the holes exactly. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, it probably goes there, and someone just ripped the hooks out and these people never bothered to fix it. Knowing that a person is doing it kind of makes you more likely to be like, yeah, but people can be wrong sometimes. We're mm-hmm. probably smarter than them.
Right.
And then you get hung up.
And incidentally, with the hook thing, it turned out there were hooks.
There were hooks.
Just in a different spot.
That yeah.
So then after the fact, you're thinking, did they put those two screws on the wall just to mess with us? And because they were perfect. They fit exactly.
My assumption, and again, this is just kind of showing my biases or whatever,
sure.
But my assumption was that it used to be there and that puzzle changes occasionally.
Yeah, that would work.
It could even be that they were there last time.
Uh-huh.
And there's probably hook holes elsewhere around the room and they move those hooks around.
Uh-huh.
And just change the thing on the combination on the safe.
Yeah. But it works either way.
The one that I enjoyed the most
mm-hmm.
was there was one of many boxes with a lock on it, and you opened it up and it had two black light flashlights in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which were right next to a whiteboard with a bunch of colored letters on it, multicolored letters, and clearly it was, and I say clearly, knowing now that it was wrong and the blacklight had nothing to do with this puzzle, but it clearly was, if you shine the blacklight on this, certain letters are going to luminesce and certain letters are going to disappear and we're going to have to mm-hmm. unscramble those. And so we kept beating our heads against that for a while, but then Tom and I got to take the two flashlights and be like, we're just going to go Hardy Boys on this business and shine it on every surface in the room. And sure enough, there are words and arrows and crap hidden in other places nowhere near where we found the flashlights.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to turn the lights off to do it. And they had these blinky lights that occasionally lit up the room too much, so the black light didn't work. And that was fun. I enjoyed that part a lot.
Yeah, they did a good job of putting a lot of red herrings that in place that weren't, that made you think, I'm probably going down the wrong trail, but it's just
close enough.
Just close enough that I gotta try it.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that kept catching my attention is they had a lot of desks with a lot of drawers in them. Like,
yeah.
They had this great old roll-top desk.
Yeah.
One of the, you know, the old, like, late 1800s style desk that has, like, 5,000 different tiny drawers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I probably spent 5 minutes opening and closing drawers alone, nothing else, barely even looking in them, and then came back later to all of these drawers I'd already checked that I already knew were empty and checked all of them with the blacklight to see if any clue was written in invisible ink inside there.
And still, there was a point at which, so Tom wasn't the only one who'd gone through those drawers. Someone else had gone through and found a clue in there and uh-huh. found some other stuff. And much later, there was like, We needed to find this thing, and it turns out one of the compartments in one of the drawers was full of little metal models of bears. And no one seemed to remember that, except for one person was like, yeah, I found those at the beginning. I said bears. And I was like, that's not helpful to anyone.
Communication is key.
Yeah, communication really is key. And that's where having 9 people got crazy, because you're like, either you're having the same, or different people ask you the same question over and over again,
uh-huh.
or everyone's like, well, I don't want to ask that question again. I'm sure they heard it asked the first 3 times. And so someone who wasn't listening because they were doing something else misses that all the rest of us are still looking for bears.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
I went in with kind of low expectations, like, oh, this is just going to be kind of cheesy, like a cheesy, like a Halloween haunted house type stuff. But the theme hit that had that feel to it, but the actual puzzles that you were tasked with figuring out and the way it manifested among the group was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was surprised to enjoy it because they had two running while we were there. Mm-hmm. And I think they have three or four. I think they were just running the two.
This one has three different scenarios.
The third one was the spy sleuth, whatever.
Yeah, they have the ringmaster, the circus one, the spy one, and the zombie one.
And I do not find the scary carnival scene setting at all compelling. It just annoys me. I don't think clowns are scary. I don't think any of that stuff is even...
We did an entire segment on creepy clowns.
I know, because it's funny, they're not actually scary.
We have a running joke about murder clowns.
Right. To my point, that if you're trying to create suspense, a carnival is not the thing to do it because I think they're hilarious.
Fair enough.
So, and especially when it's done in TV, my wife watches that American Horror Story, and they did a whole one with the carnival, and I'm just like, this show looks bad and not frightening at all.
I don't care for it. I've never actually watched
it. So I wasn't excited. I saw the zombie one. I was like, oh, the zombie one, I mean, seems played out, but maybe like it could be cool. And the espionage one seems pretty cool. That could be really, you know, tricky. And then they're like, we're doing the carnival. And I was like, oh, I hate carnivals.
We did the carnival one because that was the one
no one in the group had already done.
Yeah. Yeah. The other two, people in the group had done for work outings or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
But all things, it was enjoyable. No one, I didn't feel like I had really had to throttle anyone too much.
Sure.
And we generally had a good time. We figured it out with 8 minutes left, 8.5 minutes.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, 8.5 minutes left. The there's this great, I don't know if I should spoil it.
Do it. It's the spoiler section.
Sure. At the end, there was a little tag we had to... There was like a RFID tag we had to wave against a thing on the door. And then also put your hand on the door. And we got, with the RFID tag, clear instructions on how to interact with the door. It's like, touch the thing, touch the numbers, wave the tag, the door will unlock.
I get the feeling it wasn't intended to be a puzzle at all. Because the RFID tag came with, like you said, instructions that I'm pretty sure were... just a reprint of what came with that device.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted a keypad to let you out, and I think that's just the one they bought.
Yeah. But somehow, certain members of our group got a hold of it and were completely unable to figure this out. Just hitting buttons and waving tags, and it's not opening and not opening. And finally, somebody gets it, and it opens up, and the lady on the other side is like, guys.
Yes. She saw the others of us standing in the back just like, oh my God, that's the thing that took us the longest. And she, like, I think she caught one of our eyes because she was like, oh yeah, we've had other groups who have gotten this far and then run out of time trying to figure out. I'm like, maybe put a different, better, I guess it's not your fault.
But I could see the instructions from where I was standing and like, they weren't that bad. I'm like,
no, they weren't. I only saw two of the four panels of instructions and I knew pretty much how to make it.
I'm like, I should dive in now. Let them.
Let them play. Let them have their fun.
let them do their thing, which is a very kind of an arrogant thing to say, and I probably would have screwed it up had I been, you know, under pressure. But, you know, that was the other kind of nice thing about nine people, is that I never felt like there was any pressure on me.
Yeah.
Which let me think more clearly.
Yeah.
About the puzzles I was working on.
Oh, so the one I wanted to point out, because it was the only time I saw you frustrated,
uh-huh,
was the squares and the Fs.
Oh yes.
It was count the number of, and so. Those, I thankfully, I had no trouble with the one on the right-hand side, with count the Fs in this sentence, because I had just watched a video about how your brain processes language, mm-hmm, and how you don't read, when you read a sentence aloud, your brain does something. So if it said count all the letter Fs, and basically, because I'd watched this, I knew, like, mm-hmm, because the instructions were read this sentence aloud. Now count all of the Fs in the sentence. And the read the sentence aloud was such a red flag. Because, mm-hmm, basically, if you go back and try to count them, you're going to miss most of anything where it doesn't sound like a letter F, that kind of thing. But I had just watched this video like a week ago. And I was like, nope, I know how that works.
Yeah.
So that one I was sure on. But then the combination wasn't working based on the number of Fs and whatever else. And I was like, Tom, go back and make sure I read that correctly, mm-hmm. and they're not pulling one of those stupid jokes where it's like, we didn't actually mean the F's in the sentence, we meant the F's in this sentence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, but I didn't communicate that clearly to you because I was shouting it across the room, and I walk back over after we had, I think, gotten it open, and you just looked so mad. But we got it, so.
Yeah, that's one of those things, one of the things I liked about having that many people in the room was that that was the only time I felt like people were leaning on me to do something,
yeah.
which... It sucks if people expect you to be able to get a thing like, oh, Tom, you're the smart one. You can figure this puzzle out. You're like, no, I can't. Stop. It's like when this one time I had a roommate in college who was really good at Guitar Hero, or I thought he was. And we went over to a house party one night, and I talked him up a bit, and he got mad. He's like, don't do that.
We talked about this on another episode earlier.
Just don't put that evil on me.
Now the pressure's on, and it's no longer fun. I just have to live up to the expectations of people who have heard that I'm great at thing.
Yeah, and now it's like solving this puzzle isn't fun anymore. Now it's just people now, and if you frack it up, it's gonna be like, do you have to censor frack?
Is
that okay? Now people are gonna be like, haha, you're a big dummy.
Yep.
Which, incidentally, both Gary and I couldn't count the right number of squares. So I mean,
I also didn't, and someone else.
Yeah, I'm still
had done
sure
it way
how
worse
they...
before. I know what it was. So basically there was a grid of squares and then another smaller grid inside, and you had to count all of the squares in it to get the number. But the one we, I think, all missed was, so you see the main square and you're like, okay, there's one, and I know where all the little ones are, and then I know I have to go along the grid, but there's one mid-sized square in the middle, and your brain just skips it, because you're like, I got the big one, and I know all of the 2x2 squares, but there's a 3x3 square in the middle.
Gotcha, that's probably what I missed.
That we all missed.
Yeah. It's a lot of cool puzzles like that. There's a lot of good puzzles like that that are a little bit brain twisty, but there's also a lot of smaller puzzles that, if you're not like into puzzles and games, that still work.
Yeah. I think to the credit of our group, the biggest problems we had were all with the locks, like trying to figure out how they actually worked, because they had some really cheap, chintzy luggage padlocks on a couple things that were like, I'm pretty sure I have the right combination, but... the numbers are sideways, so does it read from left to right or top to bottom? And does the number have to be on the line or next to the line? Like, they were just badly made locks, and so you were like, maybe I have it wrong. Or one of them was like a realtor's lock that was supposed to have a key in it, so it took us forever to try to figure out how to get it open, because Devin was trying to open it like a padlock instead of pulling the front face off of it. And then we got it out, got the front face off, and there was nothing inside of it. But it turns out you just had to pull the front face off, and then it would open like a padlock. But it was just a nonsense lock.
Sure.
So it wasn't even that the puzzle was hard. It was like, how does this stupid piece of hardware work? Why is it even here?
What was up with the encyclopedias? Like, I never looked at them, but I saw other people thumbing through.
So there was a whole
World
thing
Book
of
encyclopedias.
There was a whole thing of encyclopedias. There was a hint somewhere about a missing volume or something, and there was a missing encyclopedia that was somewhere else, and it was N through O. And then inside that roll top desk, there was a thing that had page numbers, line numbers, and word numbers, and so you had to work out some puzzle by finding this word on this line of this page, and that was when we got the hint that was like, P means page.
Oh.
So, yeah, we got there eventually.
Cool, gotcha. I wondered what that was all about, and I never found out. I heard some people yelling about presidents at one point. I'm like, I must go over, and I'm like, stay calm, don't be too thirsty about it.
Yeah. That one was disappointing. I didn't pay much attention to that puzzle, but it turned out, like, I think we unlocked something that just had the name of a president in it. And it was just
I think it was the first president. I'm like, oh, that's an easy one.
Well, that was the hint that they found.
Oh.
But before, they already knew there was a list of presidents in there, like, we need to figure something out. And that was when it was like, oh, maybe it's a puzzle. And then we opened up the thing and it was like, oh, the first president.
That's George Washington.
Yeah. So we should wrap this segment up because we're about to hit the 30-minute mark.
Fair enough.
But The last point I wanted to make, I feel like it needed something to create more suspense. And whether that was more immersion in the world, or just having set up that, hey, there are jump scares, or like something bad will happen, or even make it like you get your money back, or you get some of your money back if you beat the timer, but you don't if you go over time.
Or to go in a different direction. There are tools you have available that are useful for solving clues that go away partway through. Like, or like maybe if at the halfway mark, the lights turn off.
Yeah.
And now you have to do everything in the dark by the light of a black light.
Yeah, or your cell phone, which kind of makes it less.
Devin was talking to me after the game. Apparently, the one we did is like one of their two beginner ones.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if the more advanced ones do that kind of thing, but that might have been it.
Yeah.
This is the intro game.
Yeah, I just felt like it was fun. It was very casual, though, and I think once if you're a sort of person who likes doing, you know, a timed puzzle, I think something to make the timer matter more than like we did it or didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Would have been good.
I agree. Cause I often forgot the timer was running.
Yeah.
So something, or even if it's just like certain times a horrible scream erupts just to spook you.
Yeah.
That would be fine.
Like carnival music playing, but I didn't notice it. And I'm bad at tuning out background noise, but it was like, unless I was standing under the speaker, I didn't notice it. And there was a music puzzle and I was like, maybe I need to read sheet music to see which song it is that's playing on the thing. And then there was just like a question about a pop song lyric or something.
I thought you were like an idiot savant for music, but couldn't read music.
I can read music. I can't sight read very well.
That's what I'm thinking of.
So Johannes, it's like if I could sit down and count out the letters and figure out what a word was, but it took me a day to get through a page, but then I'm like, I know now, instead of being able to sit down and read a book. So effectively, I can't read music.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
For those not in the know, Johannes is a very talented musician.
Oh, well, thank you.
But he's not, like, formally so. I guess, is that the right way to put it?
It's a way to put it.
Okay. He doesn't read music well. It's the gist of this conversation. But we should probably end it.
We should.
Escape rooms, a lot of fun. At least the one in Washington here is the one put on by Breakout. So to the Breakout people, if you listen to this, thank you for putting on a good show for us. It was fun. We had a good time.
Please don't sue us. I realize we signed a waiver, which I just assumed was like, if I die in the escape room, it's not my problem. But I didn't actually read it. So it might have said, don't podcast about all of the vagaries and specificities of our escape room. If so, please contact us before you sue us.
Should we call them before we put this on the internet?
Whatever.
Okay.
So if you want to know how to contact us before you sue us, one of the ways is on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Another way is by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you could put it in the comments for all to see on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or you could just put it in a safe inside of a desk, inside of a room, all of which are locked and the keys are hidden inside of a different room, which is on a destroyed sinking battleship.
I'd be down.
That'd be a pretty cool room. I'd do that one.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors and also doing that.
Yay!
Okay, bye.
Hi, everybody. Barry B. Babaraboo here, founder and bartender of Barry's Biscuit Bar. Are you tired of getting falling down drunk on the weekends? You know, the kind of nights where you wind up sneaking onto a golf course, jousting with the carts, and winding up burying yourself in a sand trap to evade the fuzz? Well, next time your friend Meat invites you to do shots at the Tweet and Whistle, come on down to the Biscuit Bar instead and try some of our great varieties of biscuits. We've got, biscuits, other biscuits, butter you can put on them. I think we can melt cheese on top if you want. Hey, Sheila!
Sheila!
What?
Can we melt cheese on top of the biscuits, Sheila?
Did you get some cheese? Yeah!
All right!
There you have it, folks. We can melt some cheese on top of the biscuits for you. Try out Barry's Biscuit Bar this weekend or next weekend. Whichever weekend you want, really.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we're bringing you a new segment that we are calling Elephant versus Library.
Elephant versus Library is the hit new segment we've got going on where one of us picks one thing, the other guy picks another thing, and we fight about which one is better. That's it. That's the extent of the directions. There's no other rules. Each Elephant versus Library instance is going to be three topics or three feuds, if you will. Of 5 minutes each. So Walter is setting the timer over there. So we're going to each declare our topic. To start with here, we have flipped a coin before the game started, and Johannes is going to get to speak first on this one. So topic number one, Johannes, what have you got?
Well, we were doing board games.
Mm-hmm.
So am I stating my...
You're stating your thing, and then I'll state my thing, and then the timer goes.
Arkham Horror?
I went with Eclipse.
Okay, I was worried you may also have gone with Arkham Horror.
I seriously considered it.
I thought you might have. All right, so Arkham Horror versus Eclipse. The timer starts now.
Boom!
Well, I think that Arkham Horror is the superior board game. Because...
I think Eclipse is better.
Because Eclipse is bad, and it's for bad people. Your turn. I like a story-driven game. I like cooperative. I feel like, despite all of its problems, the sheer volume of game that is presented and narrative that is presented in Arkham Horror, first of all, gives them kind of an excuse for some mistakes here and there, because that's a huge volume of material to have produced. But also, I just think it's more fun. Generally, a game group is going to have at least one person who does not deal well with conflict. Why are they in a game group? No one knows, but they're always there.
Uh-huh.
If you're all playing together, at least when they're upset that something went wrong, generally all the rest of you are also kind of maybe a little upset because you all failed, and so you can be together on that issue. Also, I think that all of the space monsters in the Arkham Horror universe could probably destroy all of the space monsters and people in Eclipse, so it would also win in a fight.
I feel like you're underselling the number of quote-unquote mistakes Arkham makes. It's not just a few. There are serious mechanical problems with that game, and it uses volume... And just not even volume of stuff or volume of different things happening, just volume of cards that don't do things that are all that different. The events in, say, Independence Square aren't that different from the ones at the Unnameable or whatever. And so it tries to drown in number of components its design sense, whereas Eclipse is a very tightly designed game.
Disagree.
The mechanics interact with one another in a clear and precise manner.
100% disagree.
It's clear. Everybody knows what's going on. People know the
combat
score.
Mechanic in that game is so broken. The fact that anyone understands it is still up for debate. They might all be wrong.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's broken.
It's so bad.
I will grant you that there's a learning curve to it. But I don't think it's broken. You can make an intelligent and reasoned plan based on what you see other players doing in Eclipse. And you can plot the best, what's going to give you the best odds in any given combat. You can make a decision that is going forward, going to give you a reasonable chance of having the outcome you want. In Arkham, you can't do that. You can't, there's almost no decision you can make. You'd be like, yeah, it's going to work. Your decision-making is divorced from the reality of the game.
Well, that's half the fun of it, though. Arkham is creating a narrative, and you are participating in it, but you don't necessarily have the control over it that you would like.
I would
debate
that you're participating.
Where there's no narrative going on at all in Eclipse. You're just like...
I don't know that you're participating in Arkham's narrative, though. You're present for it, and you are there as the merciless wheels of the game grind you into powder. But I don't know is that really participation?
You're necessarily participating because, first of all, most of the things that happen require interaction from you, a choice or a role or something. Mm-hmm. But also, you're never going to have an experience at the Unnameable if you never go there.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay, so you're never going to have an experience, but you're never going to have Arkham if you don't set it up. So, yes, you do have to put a modicum of input into the game to get it to proceed, but... Your input just sets a wheel in motion. Your input does not in and of... Like, if I decide to go to the Unnameable versus the Silver Toilet Lodge, I might be either way. I might not be.
Sure.
It's just... That just happens to be where I went.
But that's true of most narrative gameplay. Half-Life, you're on a rail, and you just run through it. It's still a truly excellent game that is accomplishing a narrative.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that Arkham isn't an enjoyable experience. I'm saying that I like Eclipse more, and I think Eclipse is the better game.
Well, yeah, I think because you're a member of Al-Qaeda. Eclipse isn't fun. Eclipse is something that your dork friends railroad you into playing, and then you suffer through it for 3 hours.
You can't tell me
that... The fun part of Eclipse is exploring, and it's not fun because there's nothing interesting to find.
Sure there
are. This is the opposite problem where where Arkham has a mazillion cards, there are not enough tiles. There's because they needed to create a limit to the size of the galaxy. Uh-huh. And so you know what you're going to find in what ring. The end.
I think I won that one, clearly. All right. So if you want to vote on which one of us won round one.
We should figure out how to put a poll on the website.
That would be pretty cool.
Well, I'll run on Twitter for now.
You can vote on Twitter. That's how we're going to do that. All right. So round two. I guess, should we swap who goes first
sure.
on round two? So for round two, my choice for thing that we're fighting about. Oh, you look happy. That's a bad sign.
I'm so excited.
My choice is the film Interstellar.
Okay. My choice is the film or book. Your choice, The Last Unicorn.
Oh, my God. All right. So I'll go first defending my position here. And
you ready?
Ready when you are. Yeah.
In 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so we can argue that Interstellar is clearly, it's got the Chris Nolan is a great director. The visuals are stunning to the point where they had to invent new math in order to make them happen. Like, there are actual for real astrophysics papers published about the math they had to figure out how to do to present the black holes and all of the anomalies and stuff that happen in Interstellar. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So the visuals alone, it is a triumph, a tour de force. But the narrative also has very interesting things to say about human perception and the limits of our understanding of time.
And corn.
And corn and kale also. And no, not kale, okra. And the way in which all of these things interact. It's very impressive world building done with a surprisingly light brush for Christopher Nolan, I thought. You know, we don't have...
Saying a light brush for Christopher Nolan is... I don't have a good comparison ready to make here, but I'm just saying he's not good at light brush.
Like, yeah, but
his light brush is everyone else's. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's long, but I feel like it uses the time well. Like, it uses that 3.5-5 hours effectively to convey the broad strokes things. And like, you need that kind of space to do the kind of spectacle that this movie has to be,
mm-hmm.
or it's not going to work. And I feel like The Last Unicorn does not have any of that. And the things that it aspires to be, The Last Unicorn, don't measure up to what Interstellar aspires to. So it both shoots lower and fails to hit the target, whereas Interstellar shoots higher, and if not a bullseye, is at least in that next ring out, I think.
I have to counter that, because what Interstellar lacks is not just Alan Arkin, who is incredible and a national treasure, but a bumbling wizard who accidentally turns a tree into a sort of tree woman who sexually assaults him. Come on. Also some court sort of giant bull and a creepy talking cat. It really likes being petted a lot. It goes, oh yes, do that. And it purrs. Like, come on, Interstellar, I don't think there's even a cat in Interstellar. No cat, no unicorn.
There's no unicorn.
No yet. King. I think you can't even make a comparison.
Hold on here.
The Last Unicorn is so, so great. Interstellar couldn't possibly live
hold
up.
Hold on here, though. Interstellar.
They had to invent new
hold
math.
Hold on. Just hold the F on here.
Nothing? No?
For new math. They had to invent new math for The Last Unicorn? What?
Yeah, to calculate how many unicorns were left.
They only have one.
They had to figure that out somehow.
No, but hold on. Your argument is that Interstellar doesn't have any kings, but Interstellar is a post-Enlightenment film. It's set in a democracy. We have realized the error of monarchy by the time of the movie and moved on to a system of government that relies on consent of the governed.
Are we in a post-Enlightenment world right now?
Yeah.
There are still kings.
Yeah, but they're in England.
So you're wrong.
They're in England.
No, there are kings, like for realsies kings.
We beat England in a fight.
We beat them.
We beat them in a fight. It's fine. They don't count anymore.
And now they have lost.
Yeah, but you could be in a post-Enlightenment world with pre-Enlightenment civilizations on the periphery.
Right, so you have no idea when The Last Unicorn is set. It's never addressed. Maybe they live in an island nation with wizards and kings.
You can't.
And the one final unicorn.
That's not how
your argument is invalid.
It's not how it works.
Plus, there is equally as much BS magic that doesn't make any damn sense in Interstellar.
No.
He goes to a five-dimensional library in the sky.
No, they establish early in the movie the existence of five-dimensional beings who put the wormhole there. That is not a cop-out Deus Ex Machina move at the end of the film.
No,
that was established early on.
It's a cop-out Deus Ex Machina move in the beginning,
Interstellar
is, I think, another Chris Nolan movie.
It is. Interstellar is necessarily about pioneering and exploration and beyond the realms of current knowledge. We don't have... So you have to have that sense of a thing that doesn't fit in the current paradigm in order for that kind of story to make sense.
Yes, but Tom?
Yes.
Alan Arkin.
I don't know what that means.
He's Alan Arkin. He's in this and So I Married an Axe Murderer and other such films. That actually, he's pretty amazing. He's in a lot of other stuff. Is this timer ever going to go off? Jeez.
I don't know if it is.
Maybe it never started.
Good God.
Nope, 12 seconds.
Oh, 12 seconds.
So I win by virtue of unicorns and Alan Arkin, I am the smarter one.
Matthew McConaughey,
and
clearly.
Yeah, who cares
Muffles
about that
Mucky
guy? He was in that one dumb thing that's about a detective.
All right, so if you want to vote for which one of us won round two,
clearly
on Twitter,
me.
Clearly.
Where there will be
him.
A third option to vote for Alan Arkin.
Third option to vote for Please Don't Do This Segment Again. All right, so we're back over to Johannes to introduce his topic for the third segment of Elephant versus Library.
Our third and final argument for this first time we have done this segment,
yep.
And it is Elephant.
What a coincidence, mother. Mine is library. Indeed.
Well, are you ready?
Ready like Freddy.
Who, Mercury?
Sure.
Man, I'm not prepared for this at all. In 3, 2, 1, do it. An elephant would win. All right, an elephant versus a library.
Sure.
A library is a building. Full of books.
Yes.
Can we agree on this definition of library?
I have a library on my computer of InDesign files.
Okay,
so
we're going to leave that out for the sake of
you can't,
meaningful discussion.
No, hold on.
You agreed and then you disagreed.
You
already agreed
you
to the definition of a library as a building full of books.
You cannot just dismiss parts of my position.
Tom
here.
Is stupid.
There are...
Which has also now been agreed to and is in the record. An elephant is a large pachyderm. For the purposes of argument, this will be an adult bull elephant.
Oh, okay, fine.
It would knock down the library.
No.
And maybe it's a concrete library. But if a library has all the books destroyed, it's not much of a library anymore. So if that elephant gets in there, then it's all over.
I've never...
Just tusks and pee and poo pee.
I've never once been in a library that had large enough doors for an elephant to get in.
I have.
Where?
All three of the Ann Arbor branch. There's four now.
The elephant might be able to get through the front door into the foyer, but it's not going to be able to get all the way into the stacks.
Why not?
There's too many things in the way.
I mean, they might have trouble with stairs in the main branch library.
Elephants are not like cave dwellers. They're afraid of enclosed spaces.
I know. So once it's in there, it's going to freak out.
Yeah, but it's not going to. But that's my point. It's not going to go in the first place.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Not
I'll blindfold it and lead it in there. Take that, libraries.
Yeah, but that's not the elephant fighting the library. That's you attacking the library with an elephant. That is an entirely different conversation.
So wait.
Flag on that play.
If I attack
penalty.
Something with another
penalty.
Thing, that thing isn't fighting because I'm the one who. But
that's you fighting the
so
library.
So if I sick a dog on you and the dog is chewing on your arm and you're punching it and it's biting
but,
you,
no, that
you're,
is.
You're, the dog isn't fighting
that,
you.
But see, the key, the thing you're overlooking is that you have sicked the dog on me.
See, no, not overlooking. I asked you a question, which you have not answered.
Yeah, but no.
It's like
no,
a presidential debate.
That is you attacking me with a dog.
So the dog is not fighting you.
The dog is not attacking me of its own volition.
That doesn't matter. Is it Tom versus dog
that,
in a scenario where
totally
you're trying to fight a dog
totally
off of you?
Matter because in the library versus elephant scenario, that elephant will not go up against that library or enter that library to attack the books absent some goading.
So now anything versus anything else only matters if that thing would fight the other thing of its own volition? Well, you've negated this entire segment forever.
Well, I mean, no, you can't. You can't imply that. You can't negate the defenses of the library by saying, "Oh, well, I'll make the elephant go in there." The library's chief defense is that it's a huge granite building. The elephant's not going to go in, and the elephant can't knock down that many granite blocks all at once.
I painted the library to look like the other elephant that stole this elephant's girl, and so it hates it, and it's real mad. Checkmate, atheists.
I don't think the elephant's going for it because elephants.
You can't say I'm going to win an elephant versus library argument by saying it would never be an elephant versus library scenario.
I'm not saying I'm not saying that at all.
You just don't think you can win.
I'm saying the elephant would not enter the library.
Well, we discovered after finishing the segment that something went wrong with the recording and we lost the last few minutes there. So we had a minute and 34 left on the timer when the recording cut out, and Tom was speaking about some dumb bullcrap because he's wrong all the time. So we're going to come in with him leading off, and he will have a minute. Well, we will have a minute 34 left. Ready?
Yes.
3, 2, you're an idiot. 1.
So listen, you are assuming things about your elephant, but we're not taking into account our things about the library, which worked to its advantage. So the library, containing the sum total of human knowledge, because it has access to both the internet and the books within.
Oh, so this is not just a library. This is the library.
Any given library is going to have.
What about a library in like the middle African village that doesn't have internet access? What about a library? A library in Antarctica.
But again, as we've established, you've got to average them.
We established that? When did that happen?
We did establish it.
You've got to average all the elephants then, and they're freaking gigantic at that point.
That's not how averaging works.
Sure. Listen. I'm taking the whichever one gives me the biggest elephant. There's different kinds of averages. I win forever. Stupid case.
The library, having contained all of this information, is going to be able to defend itself. It's going to have defenders who recognize its value having read
the books. Have you ever been in a library?
Yeah.
How many defenders are in a library?
A lot.
They're going to be like, shh, keep it down. It's a library.
Well, and then the
elephant's going to be like, that's the noise they make.
That's not the sound an elephant makes at all. You see, clearly you need to go to a library and find out the sound that elephants
make. I'm not going there. There's going to be an elephant there.
Also,
just getting the place up.
And also, they're
it's dangerous. Aversion
to go, but it's not going to go inside. That's the thing that we've been talking about this whole time.
The elephant was there. He was doing research for a paper.
Well,
or he
hold
was
on.
Looking for a book to read.
Elephants don't research.
How do you... That is racist.
It's not.
That. I'm disappointed that our internet argument didn't get quite to the point where you're Hitler, but it was close.
So if you want to vote on which one of us won round 3, that will be on Twitter as well.
Indeed. There will be those things.
Yes.
Where you will vote for me to have won because I am best.
Then you will actually vote that he lost because he's a fool and also a moron.
Strong, strong case. So if you would like to vote against Tom, you can do that where I will be putting the poll, which will only have an option against Tom on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send emails supporting me and condemning his vile baseness to mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can just tell the world how dumb you know Tom is to be on the website in the comment section at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also give this wonderful segment that you clearly enjoyed 5 stars in a review on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Google Play Music, which are also places where you can listen to this podcast.
Or you can just march on the Capitol and install me as your glorious librarian leader.
Seems like a bad plan, but
it's a great plan.
I suppose it's potentially possible in some world.
Best possible plan.
Well, we'll see you next week in the potentially horrible dystopian future where Tom is our librarian overlord.
Yeah.
Sounds like the worst.
It's the best timeline.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Keepin' It Creel with Gary Smulahan, the hit new fishing show on the Podcasting Online Organizational Parade, or POOP. This week, Gary explains to us what a creel is. It's a little wicker basket you put your dead fish in after you kill them. I guess you don't need to listen to it now. Sorry, Gary.